Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I told you. My name is Rajin.
That's right. Kidnapped when you were a child, sold into a life of slavery. And it was just a coincidence that you happened to escape when I was at that market. The chemist knew I was looking for information about the Zindi. Is that why you showed up so conveniently?
The only thing I can tell you is that you're in danger.
Care to be a little more specific?
If I say anything else, kill me.
Who? The Zindi? How do you know I won't do the same?
All right, I think we can say that we've officially started this podcast.
All right, what podcast?
The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You must be newcomers. Welcome.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay, let's get right into it. Hello and welcome.
Hello. Oh, hi, we Jesse. Already did that.
No? What? No?
You said welcome. You were about to say to the It's Got Star
Trek. I don't
think
I said welcome before. I think
I didn't
said
this. Say
but you were about to say to the It's Got Star Trek. You're about to announce
well, just
the podcast.
Now I was, but you interrupted me.
Yeah, but you already mentioned it. You already said that it was like it's the It's Got Star Trek podcast, and now you're going to be like, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mind reading on full display this night.
Yeah.
All right. Fair points all, Dan. Either way, the point is to repeatedly mention the name of the podcast, which happens to be the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You must be newcomers. Welcome.
It's a psychological...
I'll just keep playing that sound. Psychological, every time you say it, I'll just play that sound.
It's a psychological marketing tool. You know, the people get accustomed to the name. They
What name? Of what? What's
the...
What,
of the podcast.
What's that? I don't know what...
The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You must be newcomers. Welcome.
Because the idea is that they become attached to it. They grow comfortable with the name It's Got Star Trek, and they in fact they might even feel some discomfort at the lack of hearing the
it's
title.
It's not Star Trek.
It's Got Star Trek. Yeah.
Forgive me if I don't take your word on that.
All right. Did you need to play the thing again? Because I said
you must be newcomers. Yeah. Welcome.
Or is it better? Or do I have to say welcome? Because I didn't say welcome.
You don't have to say welcome. It's just
but I do want to say just to get it clear to everybody out there. I really do want to welcome the audience who is still listening to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
There's like four people.
You must be newcomers. Welcome.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay. So. what the fuck is going on? All right. Okay. Come on. We gotta get some through some business. All right. Okay. So first, in addition to welcoming the audience, we'd like to welcome tonight our good old friend Tarek, who's joining us in studio.
I'm back.
Welcome, Tarek. Tarek has been on the show before.
In Patrick's basement.
All right. Hi, Tarek.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Several times.
Yes. So, Tarek is going to join us for our discussion tonight of Star Trek.
Hello, Scotty.
Hello.
Hello.
That's what I was trying to do a minute ago.
Okay. Hello.
The hello.
Hello.
Hello bit.
Hello.
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 Hi, Tarek.
Sabaton.
Hello.
Hello.
All right.
Hello, Scotty.
So, why are you playing the Scotty from Strange New Worlds? Not Scotty from, well, it's what is the engineer welcoming Scotty. She's saying, hi, Scotty.
Mm-hmm. What's wrong with saying that one?
Well, because nobody here is named Scotty.
Yeah, but you know.
Shouldn't you save that until we have somebody named Scott or Scotty on the podcast?
It's okay to fudge it a little bit because you get the message, but then you get to also hear the sound. And it sometimes it opens up your repertoire if you're a little loosey-goosey with it. You know?
You're loosey-goosey.
Oh, loosey-goosey.
Yeah. And in fairness, there's not a lot of high Tarek in Star Trek.
No.
I'll open up your repertoire.
Hi.
I'm going to save this one.
Hi.
You like that one?
Yeah, I'm going to make that my best of.
Okay, so can I at least say the title of the episode we're talking about?
Yeah.
Are you going to say what podcast they're listening to?
No.
We've said that a few times.
We've welcomed people to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. But even though they know which episode we're discussing because it's in the title of the podcast, they probably wouldn't have clicked listen.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for that small proportion of the audience that has just got us on automatic playlist, they're going to listen to us no matter what. We can officially announce now that we're going to get to discussing Star Trek Enterprise's Rajeem.
Do you understand how difficult, how dangerous this project is?
You mean discussing this episode?
I don't think anybody realizes.
This podcast.
Think what you're asking me to do.
So this episode may be a little bit difficult to discuss. Do you know why?
This is a silly episode.
It's a very horny episode.
Yeah.
What it is.
Oh, man.
Oh my God.
I'm horny, 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 horny.
I'm sorry.
This is a very horny.
That's why he was doing that.
Very horny episode.
Perfect.
Yes,
yeah, indeed. It was super horny. It was horny. Let's see. Archer was hallucinating horny.
How horny was it? You said that you did the horny alarm because you
was
said
some Tucker and T'Pol.
You said
so,
horny.
So they were so aroused that that made Archer hallucinate.
What is aroused a synonym for?
It made him hallucinate.
Thank you, Dan. Dan put on me. I'm just going to patiently, silently wait this out.
I'll be fine.
So that I can make my point. All right, Dan.
It
I
was,
appreciate that.
Archer was hallucinating, and then T'Pol was like, yeah. Oh, that was kind of disturbing. But like, she was going, you could tell she was going real deep with T'Pol. But then on the other hand, Hoshi, she just flirted.
Hoshi, yeah.
She just flirted with Hoshi. Mm-hmm. That was just flirting. So,
well, we didn't see what happened, really. Yeah.
I guess we don't know behind closed doors if something happened with Hoshi and Rajeem.
So, am I pronouncing that
I'm
right?
Called Rajeem.
Okay, Rajeem.
Rajeem.
I was hoping it wasn't a whole like GIF thing, you know, like Rajeem versus Rajeem.
I'm called Rajeem.
Billie Jean, Rajeem.
The two I saw looked reptilian, and they weren't very pleasant.
That's my favorite delivery she gives that episode.
They weren't very pleasant.
There's a few interesting line deliveries. And I'm
what did you do to T'Pol?
That's got an interesting
word. What did you do to T'Pol? What did you do to T'Pol?
I like that.
What did you do to T'Pol? What did you do to T'Pol?
They weren't very pleasant.
What did you do to T'Pol? 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 What did you do to T'Pol?
They weren't very pleasant.
All right. Okay, we're going to discuss all of this. We're going to get right into that.
No.
Don't worry. No dilly-dallying. We're going to have all sorts of comments, a lot of insights. Dan will have his bag of tricks that he has every week. But first, before all of that, I did want to apologize for something that I did last week.
Oh, no.
I committed a bit of a grammatical sin.
No!
Yes.
The only thing I can tell you is that you're in danger.
I violated one of my own personal bugaboos.
Shit.
You should let me run a neuroscan.
Because I referred to something as being exceptionally unique. As we know, being unique is by definition a binary proposition.
Yes.
You can either be unique or not. You can't be very unique. You can't be exceptionally unique. It's nice. It feels good to apply that sort of modifying adjective, but you just can't do it. You're
There's
either
not a
unique
big coincidence,
or you're
There's
not
one
unique.
Coincidence.
I remember I was editing the episode and I listened to myself say that. And I was like, Patrick, what the fuck? What the fuck? And I couldn't edit it out. I couldn't even edit it out. So that's why I'm apologizing. If I was able to edit it out, I would just sort of live with my shame in private.
But you know, but unique.
The context, I just couldn't. There was no way around it.
Yeah. You can modify unique depending on the scope because something can be unique for the category it's in. But that's not what you were doing.
Exactly. Right. I was adding. It was basically a modifying adverb to unique. That it was trying to apply a spectrum based adjective to a binary proposition in that context. So I apologize. We'll try to avoid that in the future. And Jesse's already bored.
No. This is
excited, Jesse.
If you had three people in a room, then they all had five traits, and two of those people shared two of those traits in common, and one of those people only shared one trait in common. Would that person with the one trait in common be more unique?
I don't know.
No,
could you graph it like a Venn diagram?
They would be unique, but you were right before. It's hard to come up with a scenario, but you're right before in the sense that you.
But that would be kind of like more
uniqueness is contextual.
Yeah,
in some degree or another.
But you could say like, I mean, you would say it would be more accurate to say that this person is more dissimilar to the other people,
or more distinct.
More distinct.
It's because
unique can't be done like
unique
that.
Does not just mean different. It means one of a kind.
Singular. Yeah.
Unique. Let's break it down. Yeah. U, the letter U, and the word unique.
Right.
There it is.
Unique.
I think
care to be a little more specific?
Yeah. That you can be more specific. You may not be more unique.
I can't argue with that.
All right. No, you cannot. Okay. All right. With that out of the way, mea culpa, we can get into our discussion of this episode. Now, a contextual thing to mention, of course, is this is a season 3 episode of Enterprise, and that means it's part of the Zindi arc, the Zindi season-long arc. Zindi. So there are aspects of this episode that may be a little confusing.
There was like the Zindi Council.
Yes, it starts out with the Zindi Council.
I have a list of things that we don't really find out about in this episode.
Ah, and thank you, Dan, for reminding me. We are trying this exercise out. And Tarek, as a listener, you let us know if this is helpful, of having Dan explain ahead of time if there are going to be any lists, mm-hmm. if there are going to be any duty or no duties, if there are going to be that's and orders. And then last week we realized that sometimes Dan will have what he refers to as a game show.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes when Dan says he has a game show, he means he has a long series of questions or riddles. Right. Last week he said he had a game show, and it turned out it was just one relatively banal question.
Very short. Sometimes some kind of like impossible task, like...
I have certain gifts.
Not gifs. She has certain gifts.
Never.
I'm past the horny bit. I'm past the horny bit.
That all is very helpful. Gives you hope to look forward to later in the episode.
Yeah, thank you.
I get to hear a list. Let's go.
All right.
I mean, because Dan sometimes I think thinks we're being sarcastic, but I'm quite legitimately excited every time Dan says he has a list, especially if it's a really long one.
Yeah, this one's 15 points.
All right.
And they're not all things that are there. Some of them are things that we find out in other episodes, but some of them are just things we just don't find out about.
And these are things. Do you think it makes sense that we go through the list now to help orient ourselves to this storyline and where it's embedded in the in the old
you could pepper the list throughout the podcast.
I don't. That would be. That's what. See, now what happens at the end is if we do the list at the end, the thing is like sometimes all those points have already been hit on, so they get peppered naturally. I think it would be hard for me to force the peppering.
Well,
what kind of pepper do you think it is?
Black pepper.
Do you think it's that? Do you think it's that kind of pepper? Or
what do I prefer though?
I'm partial to the cayenne myself.
Thank you, Tarek. Yeah. Set and Spike.
Are you a cayenne guy, Tarek?
No, I just knew that was coming.
Like, that was like, was there like even cayenne. Like cumin in there? Like, what the fuck?
They had all sorts of stuff. So I was watching
this. There
wasn't
that many spices. So, it was like mustard.
I was watching this with my wife, and she was really delighted by the trading spices for
black pepper.
Yeah, that
for,
was
for
that
what was
cool.
essentially a recipe, right?
On our planet, wars were fought over these.
Wars.
And did you notice Archer was being all like, because they were asking where that other merchant was, and he was like, well, if you give me some shit, I'll tell you. He's like, well, we'll just take our business elsewhere, essentially. He was like, he's like, you can work out the deal with my...
Archer
with
was in a grumpy mood.
But the thing is like, it was just... I was thinking
he was all
it
itchy.
It was just spices. It cost them like nothing. But then he might have just wanted to seem like a good, good negotiator. But then he was also noticed that too. Is this whole episode he was a grumpy grump on
his
a log.
Grumpiness
is that a word? Is that a phrase? Grump on a log.
It is now.
It is. Yeah, he was a grump on a log.
You might have coined it. Maybe not. Write into feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Grump on a log is the subject line.
He's a grump on a log.
It's our word.
We'll get to your list in a second, but now is a good time to mention this itch that Archer has. I took it as a sort of clumsy metaphor for horniness, but it's not really, because this episode is a very horny episode. I won't play the tape right now, but you all just imagine horny. Just imagine it's playing in the background.
I agree.
Horny. But the context is
excellent.
And Dan, and forgive me if I'm infringing on your list here, but the context is that this is just a few episodes after Earth has been attacked by the Zindi. A whole bunch of people have died.
Like 7 million?
Slightly more than the Holocaust, which I think is probably was on purpose to indicate what the audience is supposed to feel. This is a serious attack. This is unusual in the Star Trek context. This is a big third season arc that's mirroring ideas of preemptive warfare and the Iraq War. All that kind of stuff. So very interesting season. It was Star Trek's sort of first really going for a full season comprehensive arc. Not quite as serialized as future shows like Discovery, but definitely moving even further in that direction than Deep Space Nine did.
I can't even begin to speculate.
In this episode, that's the context. And so part of Archer being all grumpy, frankly, this whole season, is he's all got the pressure on him to save Earth from the horrible Zindi. Oh,
and actually, there's one part where...
But it comes off as him being horny and...
Horny.
Yeah,
and grumpy.
And grumpy because he's horny.
And to that point, there's an exchange where Regine is like, the only thing I can tell you is that you're in danger. And he's like, can you be more specific? She says, if I say anything else, they'll kill me. And Archer goes, who, the Zindi? How do you know I won't do the same? Now... Like,
yeah, he's trying to be all like,
but the thing is like, that's like, normally it's kind of like he's in such a mood this episode that he might just like, he won't, you know, he won't.
Well,
but like, he's in such a fucking mood. You don't know what he's going to do.
Just strongly consider it.
Yeah. There's a little more truth to that. Is that
later in the season?
Is truth a binary? Is truth a binary? Can something be more true?
There's philosophical arguments that truth is not necessarily a binary, more so than for unique, I think. Because
I was going to say that he was more truthful when he said that, how do you know I won't do the same, than he normally would
be. But eons ago, years ago, we discussed Carpenter Street, which was a season 3 Enterprise episode.
Eons.
With time travel and stuff. And in that one, Archer just beats the shit out of somebody to get information out of them because of the threat to Earth. It's, again, mirroring similar conversations that were going on in the real world post 9/11, pre and during the second invasion of Iraq. So now, your list. And remind us again, do you have a title for your list?
Well, it's not really a title. It's more of a description, but I put it as a title. This episode has a few things that don't pan out until later, or before, or never. So that's the title of this list.
That's a long title.
Yeah, it wasn't meant as a title. It was more
of
a descriptor.
Is it longer than the list?
Unanswered questions.
Yeah, there you go. I also want to mention, last week we discussed that's this week. Last week we discussed Resurrection.
By the way, all that thumping, audience at home, is Dan just being real excited.
And Patrick telling you that was a passive-aggressive way of like getting me to shut up.
Wasn't a passive-aggressive way?
Well, it was indirect. Often like when people say something, to pretend to be helpful. But really, it's a criticism that's passive aggressive. I would argue that.
We've heard.
I can't argue with that.
I think you just did argue that.
But if it's active aggressive.
So last week we watched Resurrection DS9, which was a boring episode. And I just wanted to mention that, like, when I was talking into my television to tell it what episode to go to, mm-hmm. I said play Star Trek Voyager.
You talked to your TV.
Season 6, Episode 8. And it played Season 7, Episode 8. Didn't get close. It's never gets it right.
Did you shoot your TV?
But Season 7, Episode 8 begins with Rom singing in a nightclub. And I was like, I wish we'd watched that episode.
Yeah, that's...
Because he was all nightclub singing, Rom was.
Under a paper moon or something. That's where Rom decides to live in the holodeck because of his trauma.
That's Nog.
Nog. Nog. So Rom was singing or Nog?
Rom was singing like nightclub song.
Rom trauma.
Oh, I'm trying to look up what up. Season 7, Episode 8. Season 7, Episode 8. This is me vamping. Oh yeah, the siege of AR-558.
Oh shit.
I don't know why it begins with Rom singing, but anyway.
You sure it's Rom and not Nog?
I am positive that's Rom.
That would have been the episode that he gets his leg blown.
Yeah, because then
off.
It's the following. It's later on that he's hanging out with
Vic.
Vic Fontaine. Anyway,
no, it probably maybe Rom sings after him or something.
Deep Space Nine talk. What was the point of that? You were just commenting.
I was just commenting.
This was just sort of a fun anecdote about a bug in the audio recognition for which service was it? Paramount Plus?
It was, yeah. It wasn't Paramount Plus's fault. It wasn't really a criticism. It was just like a fun little tidbit I was sharing. You know, a little bit of data that you weren't necessarily expecting.
I enjoyed it.
Y'all must be mistaken.
A little bit of data. A little bit of lore. And you know, data and lore. Data and lore are synonyms.
Go for it. That's now my new saying is when someone's right about something, I'm gonna say go for it.
You got it.
Go for it.
You got
Don't be a grump on a log. Go for it.
I will try not to be.
Or not even go for it, because that's a verb. No, when you're right, you say go for it. Okay, never mind. Okay, I'm looking at a script of Siege of AR-558. In parentheses, it says Rom is singing "The Lady Is a Tramp," slightly off key. Vic is out front.
Weird.
His first line is Rom saying, "So what do you think?" And then Vic's like, "Not bad, but the lady is a tramp, not a scamp."
All right.
Okay. So now we can move on to the list. That was the intro to the list. That was the intro. See, you know, you have an opening act and you have a headliner. That was the opening act. Was that little bit of information I gave you? But this is a headliner. This episode is a few things that don't pan out until later or before or never. Number one, are we bored of this? Should we move on and come back to it later?
We're
invested like, now.
Yeah, it actually shocks me that Dan thinks we're bored because Tarek, Jesse, and I are just staring at Dan with rapt attention.
I know, but I've been going on about this other thing. Anyways,
Belana's on it.
So now it's all built up too much. So the things we don't find out about. We don't really find out much about this number one super weapon. We know it's a bio weapon.
The secondary
weapon. But we don't know why they're making it. They kind of obliquely refer to it, but
first weapon is a sort of a Death Star style laser beam that while this I think overall is an interesting season, it is founded on a sort of a hilariously stupid premise that creatures would test their big mega weapon on the place that they plan to eventually destroy, right? So they sent this prototype version of this weapon to Earth in the first episode and go and vaporize 7 million people. And they're like, okay, cool. The test worked. Now we can spend the rest of the season building a bigger version. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you test it on some moon or something and then be like, okay, why would you give this information to these horrible human people who are now going to what they're doing, what they're reacting by coming and chasing you guys down. So inexplicable. But anyway, that's one weapon. And now we're finding out that
welcome to Earth,
that the reptilian folks are all about this other. Was it just, it was the reptilians were into it. The insectoids were into
so
it.
So all the yeah. So these
it's
are all
on the nose. Those it's are all on the nose to put those together because like they're both the not as human, but I think it's offensive to group them together because like don't lizards usually like eat insects?
Yeah. Typically, yeah.
I don't think they'd be friends. I think they're telling us that they'd be on the same side because they're both
there was some kind of like
non-human
sea turtle people.
Yeah, the
aquatics.
These were all Zindi. So yeah, there was the Degra, there was the insectoids, the arboreals, which look like monkey people, right? The reptilians, the aquatic, and one called humanoid. But like, aren't they all?
Degra is a humanoid. Degra is the character.
But like.
That dude was in Voyager.
There was a different. There were six people. There was a human.
They're all kind of humanoid.
Yeah, but there's
even
one
the insectoids.
I know.
Are.
That's what I was gonna say. Is they're all kind of humanoid.
Yeah.
The aquatics like, are the least humanoid.
They're the least humanoid. Yeah. But like there was something. Someone other than the Degra that looked like the Degra, the one with the forehead. Right?
Degra was the person's name.
Yeah, and Tucker Smallwood.
That was his name.
That was the scientist.
Yeah, Degra's
name.
The name.
Oh, that was his name.
Yeah, the humanoid are the ones that look more like
the primates.
Well, the primate ones look slothy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Tucker Smallwood and Degra. I forget Tucker Smallwood character's name, but Tucker Smallwood
Dolan?
We saw it may be because we saw him most recently in that Voyager episode we watched in the flesh. He played an admiral in human form.
Oh no, that wasn't Dolan. Dolan was the reptilian.
Oh, was he the reptilian?
Yeah, that was Scott McDonald.
Yeah, some of these names are confusing for me. But yeah, so
this was once again the era where like some effects, like the practical effects were good. The digital effects were kind of like they were interesting to look at, but it was like the insectoids looked so goofy.
Yeah, but then some of the other stuff is I thought this was a really well-directed episode. Like the shot of the shuttlecraft leaving the Enterprise was really cool.
Yeah, it was tight.
But like
largely digital.
Yeah, it's just whenever they like try to do anything too fancy,
it's
like
creatures they have trouble with.
Yeah, that gun where that crazy fucking gun that the reptilian shot where it, like the blob stuck against the wall and shot bullets backwards. Like it looked a little like
the
like,
bullets looked silly.
It looked silly, but
the
like
blob looked good.
The idea I was couldn't figure out like what's the deal with this gun? Like okay,
what's
so
the deal
so
with
what
this
if you
gun?
Hit somebody with that blob?
Then does it just shooting
hit,
you?
Does it just kill you? Does is the shooting mechanism like a secondary? Is the shooting
that's a good point.
Is the shooting mechanism like a secondary function where it's like if it misses the target, then you can like have it shoot back?
Or like, it's like a surprise thing. Haha, you missed me, and all of a sudden 100 little things come out.
But does it have a primary ability to, if the blob hits you, what do you think happens? Do you think it still shoots or do you think it like blows you up? You know?
Yeah, it's a very good point.
It didn't blow up the wall, so we're gonna go with it. Yeah, probably just sticks.
It just
and then
sort of stuck there. Because it's like, okay, I shoot you point blank and then the thing just starts shooting back at me. Like that sounds crazy.
Yeah, I would think their armor would have to protect them against
it's
that.
It's got some sort of failsafe.
Maybe they had Trellium. Maybe Trellium protects you from it. Maybe
they had some sort of armor because Trellium D. The blast didn't really hurt them, just the one.
They seemed tough,
but that was an awesome weapon. It made me want to have a video game with that weapon in it. That would be cool.
Design one.
That seems like just something out of GoldenEye.
Design one.
Seems like what?
Something you'd see in like GoldenEye.
Yeah, right. Yeah, or there was a game after GoldenEye called Perfect Dark that was like GoldenEye plus more.
Made by the same studio.
Yeah, that was like
awesome. All right, Dan.
Anyways,
now Dan, we are nearing in on this break business, so you gotta get on this list.
Well, the whole reason I wanted, the whole reason I brought up the CGI thing is because I thought this episode had a lot of awesome looking like alien. It was kind of cool, like it almost like when they were on the. We can get that to later, but like I thought, like the whole going on the planet, all those crazy aliens was kind of cool.
Great.
Anyway, number two. So I mentioned number one. We don't know about the super weapon. Number two, the alternative to the super weapon. There's apparently some even worse thing than a planet destroying weapon. They said there's an alternative
bioweapon. I guess they just
is that bio. Bioweapon, the second one?
The second one.
So the super weapon, the first one that they're talking about is not, the planet destroying thing is not the bioweapon.
That's Degra's plan. That's the initial plan.
That's the one they're complaining is taking too long, and he's all like, it takes a long time to destroy a whole planet.
Well, then I guess I have to take that off my list. As we do know what the alternative to the super weapon is, it's a bioweapon. So now it's a four. See, this is part of the list. We get to learn along the way, or at least you get to teach me.
Actively editing as we go.
Yeah, right. So at least I'm learning. Everyone else probably knew that. Okay, number three. What's some of the background on that Trellium mine attack? All we really know is that the humans attacked it or someone attacked it, you know? We don't know any of the details other than that. And is that something we find out in previous episodes? They were talking about a human attack on the Trellium mines.
I don't have a recollection of this part of the episode.
It's in the council meeting.
It was in the council meeting at the beginning. Something about Trellium.
They're complaining the humans are invading Zindi space. And they attacked a Trellium mine.
Yeah, because there were a couple things that happened. Because again, I guess it's a good point to mention that what they're looking for in this episode, Enterprise, the reason they go to this alien bizarre planet, not bizarre,
bazaar,
is because they're looking for MacGuffin particles in this episode, in this season of Star Trek, the MacGuffin is Trellium D. Because Trellium D is the magic chemical that protects you from whatever the expanse.
The Delphic expanse.
The Delphic expanse that they're hanging out in.
Oh, it said it protected them against the okay, well, anyway.
They've got these weird anomaly things, and it's a problem. So they need Trellium D. It's like the video game levels. Like, first mission is to get the protection so you can continue deeper into the maze.
So the line I was talking about, the mine, was they were saying the humans have been through our space, and then the other guy says, they attacked a Trellium mine. We cannot wait any longer. So humans attacked the Trellium mine at some point, and I don't know why.
I'd like to point out that I resisted successfully. I did not interrupt Dan and they call it a mine.
Yeah,
joke.
I appreciate you waiting.
I thought it like 1,000 times.
You've done it while you were talking.
And I was distracted enough because it was an intrusive thought that I'm not 100% sure that I heard what the list item was. But I know I did not interrupt the list item.
Good.
I waited until you concluded.
Well,
talking.
I was just. Well done. What I was doing, I was referencing, you said you don't remember the part about the Trellium mine attack, and I was just quoting. The line
refreshing your memory.
Refreshing the line that referenced it. So at some point, there was an attack on a Trellium mine. Apparently we don't know any about it. No one here knows much about it either. So it means like
I never heard.
They don't really tell us
mine.
Much about it.
I mean, I'm presuming they're referring to something the Enterprise did in like the previous episode or something.
They probably tried to find Trellium.
Like, that's what I'm assuming. But it's like we don't know in this episode.
Yeah.
This is stuff that we don't know in
exactly.
this episode.
I know.
By itself,
Dan's list is specific to watching this episode outside of the context of the rest of the season. What's the next list item?
This is kind of a stretch.
Is this number four?
Well, we can try to move it along.
Is this normal number four or is this revised number four?
Oh, this would be revised number three, but number four. Let's just say there's 15 and this is number four.
Okay.
So this is a little stretch, but I think it applies. The relationship between Tucker and T'Pol. The idea is introduced that there's something going on with them, but they don't actually go anywhere. So that's like, that doesn't, I guess, so... According to my title, things that don't pan out until later.
Another way to put that is things that make
hints.
It go, hmm.
Yeah, I guess. Right.
I guess as well.
Yeah.
No,
Yes.
No!
Yes. Oh, I thought there'd be...
You know that isn't true.
I thought there'd be like one more.
That option has been discussed and rejected.
That's pretty good.
So number five, Archer's stress. He's like really stressed and pissed the whole episode, like we mentioned. They sort of talk...
Archer's really horny.
What did you do to the ball?
He was horny specifically tonight. That's that's convenient.
Anyways, I didn't say him being horny. I was talking about him being angry.
Patrick's argument is that he's angry because he's horny.
I think he's angry because he's horny.
Okay, but I think the episode is talking about he's angry, probably having something to do with the reference they gave about him being like turned into an alien. But it's like we don't know the whole story on that situation. We just have sort of making assumptions.
Do you have the clip of Trip saying, it's okay to go a little harder or something like that?
No. Oh, man. How could I miss that?
I was waiting for that to end the horny, horny, horny dance.
Yeah. So, like, I practiced my breathing.
Yeah.
That entire
scene is clippable.
Yeah.
There's a lot in that scene. How about this? Let's take a break because it is break time. So let's take a break.
I always miss something good.
When we get back, we'll continue this list and see where that takes us next. All right. We will be...
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Are we going to be right back?
Sorry.
Are you ready for me to say we'll be right
sorry,
back?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it.
Okay. Dan is sorry.
I was confused.
We'll put that down. We'll mark that down on the record. Dan is sorry. And we will be right back.
We've been working for 6 hours. I suggest we take a break.
You'll have to come back later.
And we're back.
Yep.
Like whales.
Do you know what they were saying there?
They were saying
let's go for a swim.
We should do both plans.
They said we must proceed on both fronts.
There we go. See, I was totally right.
So yeah, it related.
Zindi Aquatic.
Yeah. Right.
Shall we continue?
We should. Mm-hmm. All right. Now you have your list.
What's
the deal
with the planet they were on? They were on the Zindi planet, and I wanted to know if those aquatics were sitting in a tank or if their office was right up against the ocean. I think their office was against the ocean, or at least there was an ocean entrance.
What if there was like an aquarium? The office was just in the middle of the aquarium, and it was all around.
Right. I guess that would be kind of like a tank, except a surrounding tank.
The air
breathers were in the tank.
Yeah, the air breathers were in the tank. But then the tank would have to be in. Never mind. But like, yeah, I guess the point is was it isolated or was it connected to the ocean somehow where they were? We don't know.
But it could have been connected. Those weird turtle people could have just.
Those weird turtle people.
You've got to keep them separated.
Okay.
As the song
says.
Keep
them separated.
Got to keep them separated.
Okay, number six. What is the deal with the spatial anomaly that goes through the ship and almost broke Ensign Updike's arm or whatever?
Updog.
What was that Ensign's name or that officer?
Ensign Updog.
And Ensign
Cutler?
Is an officer.
It was Cutler. Yeah, is that what you said? Cutler. Yeah. Crewman Cutler. So we don't...
A crewman. That's an enlisted person.
We don't know if it's like some kind of shrapnel, some kind of gas.
Shrapnel.
You know, like why does... Is it like something that exists... in space? Like, why is it suddenly attacking? Well, not attacking, but why is it suddenly fucking up their ship? Are they in a new part of space that only contains this anomaly? Or is this anomaly spread throughout the galaxy? Like, why is this suddenly an issue that they have to worry about it?
Tarek is well positioned to provide you with an explanation.
Is it information based upon what they told us in this episode?
No, actually it's not.
See, that's the key. But I would be interested to know the deal.
It's a feature of the Delphic Expanse where the Zindi live, that they run into these anomalies. And that's what they want the Tritium D for, to line the ship to protect them from the anomalies.
Okay, and so it is in that portion of space. See, I appreciate that. That's something they didn't tell us in the episode, but
it's
MacGuffin
Land. MacGuffin particles floating through MacGuffin Land.
So is it a gas or is it plasma or is it like a or do we?
I don't think they give that much detail about
it.
Spatial anomaly suggests some sort of thing related to the fabric of space.
But if it goes through a ship and breaks someone's arm, it could be shrapnel. It could be some kind of ballistic, or I guess it could be a force that it's twists force, their shit around.
It's just space being all twisted weird. I get it.
Maybe
it's
it fucks with gravity.
Twist your arm, right?
Wouldn't it be fucked up if you had a gravity well come and like squish your arm and just your arm?
Yes.
Gravity just came up and like an errant gravity like sphere.
That's what
came
we're
and
talking about.
It's just kind of funny when you look back on a season like this where they just were like, we need to add an extra challenge. We've got a bad guy that we're going after, or a perceived bad guy in the Zindi. We have a timeline, a non-specific timeline, but a timeline of we expect another attack. We have to try to stop them before the other attack. That's the other drama-generating thing. So enemy, timeline. We're going to meet interesting characters along the way because they're rushing into an area of space that they don't have a lot of experience in, and absent the Zindi threat would have been much slower to explore, because the whole point was they were going to sort of slowly expand and explore pre-Federation space, whatever you want to call this, right. Wild, wild west of the universe at the time. But they've been forced to explore an area of space and encounter species and cultures that they weren't expecting to. That's another area to generate creative stories and drama. But
isn't there Zindi in the first episode?
Yeah, in the first episode of season 3. That's where they introduced the idea, basically.
Isn't like a Zindi like chasing down the Klingon and Broken Bow?
No, that's different. That's the Suliban.
Oh, yeah. Suliban. Yeah. Shit.
The Suliban and the Suliban, I think, come in later, because I think, isn't it the Suliban? It has something to do with the time travel people who...
That's a time travel,
Tell the Zindi that the humans are bad. Like, that's the whole gimmick is that the Zindi are doing a preemptive strike because they're told that humans are going to kill them in the future, so they should kill them now while they're weak.
Right.
But they're being manipulated in a sense.
The sphere builders.
Yeah, the sphere builder. Yeah, the whole sphere builder business. I don't know. It does get all confusing.
Totally.
Because again, what I was trying to get at is that all this Delphic Expanse stuff with the spatial anomalies is like, it's like a hat on a hat in a sense. It's like this extra challenge that they have to deal with.
It's another layer of obstacle.
It's kind of like, okay, that's because they were doing 24 episodes. Maybe if it was a 10 episode season, like nowadays, they wouldn't have added in some of these extra layers. They would have
a 7 episode arc like DS9 had at the end.
Yeah,
of season
exactly.
7.
Something like that. I got no problem with the spatial anomaly stuff. It's some fun Star Trek thing, obstacle to deal with. But it's also like, okay, just like yet another thing. So then that's why we have to go to the fun alien zoo planet place.
And
all the goofiness.
The background around the character there, the actress like passed away or something like that, and they never...
Oh, Cutler.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually really sad. And we've talked about that before, because she was really great in the... She wasn't in a lot of episodes, like 3 or 4 episodes, I think.
Yeah.
And she had a budding romance with Phlox.
Oh, that was... Right.
I think
okay.
that was her, yeah.
That was her.
Crewman Cutler. But yeah, the actress tragically passed away quite young.
She was on Seinfeld.
All right, on that happy note, Dan, list item, what are we on, number 7?
7, this is probably a quick one. This is more an observation. I guess they're all observations, but this is another observation, which makes it the 7th observation out of a list of observations that amount to 15.
All right.
But it's a quick observation, and I am making it longer by saying this. So
totally.
Certainly appears
I'll
that
try
way.
To stop smacking on the table, too. My bad, Patrick. You can mention it when I do. I won't give you shit for it.
You can do what
Jesse's doing.
Jesse's doing
it.
Jesse's doing
trying
it on
to
purpose.
Frame me.
Yeah, just for background to the audience.
That isn't necessary.
Everyone's got their little proclivities. Jesse likes to... eat all sorts of, like, I don't know, dried fruits and other things. Come in little crinkly things.
Crackly, crinkly.
Jesse is, in his spare time, Jesse in his spare time is an elderly lady with Werther's Originals and other things like that. Dan is just very emphatic, and we have a series of puffy towels and things that we put down on the table, but those towels have been, you know... Rendered.
They've been there for
nearly
300 episodes.
We've had to launder some stuff and move some stuff around, so I think we might just need to puff up Dan's thump protection. But anyway,
we're back to square one.
Back to square one.
You sure you don't need to fluff it up? Fluff me up?
We need to get a fluffer.
Fluff me
a
up.
Dan fluffer.
Floof.
If I say anything else,
like, we only have budget. We have budget either for a production assistant or a Dan fluffer.
You have an excellent eye, my friend.
All right, Dan. What
you
number,
have the most intriguing eyes.
What
we gotta
number
get
observation
a free,
are we
a free
on?
Dan
number 7. Number 6, if you count the one that I got removed, or if you don't count it, rather. Number 7. They never get the Trillium D synthesis correct. I'm assuming. When it blew, they could still do another try. I'm assuming they could still keep trying.
Maybe they tried again.
Yeah,
but they never get it. And so
it
I'm wondering.
Totally blew.
So I'm assuming that they get it in a future episode. But maybe they don't even show us that. We
don't
know.
Give a fuck.
So, but I mean, they need to protect themselves against the anomaly. Belligerent Jesse. I don't give a fuck. Give a shit about them.
No, you're right.
What the fuck is this Star Trek ultra honest shit Jesse. About anyway?
But Patrick, you were mentioning about the what he got. They got from the merchant is mm-hmm. They got a recipe.
They got a recipe.
But
there
were two recipes. There were two recipes because the first one was how to synthesize this stuff, but then the second one was converting it from liquid form into this form that they needed.
The guy was super cagey.
So no, like, they said that once it's applied, it will set into the solid form.
But I agree with Tarek that it was. You kind of got the impression that you paint it on, and then like once it dries, it's all good. Kind of like, what is it like? There's some of that, not plastic explosives, but there's some of those, you know, that type of stuff where it's like dangerous for a while, but then once it like solidifies, then it's okay.
No, there is
TNT or something
C4.
Like that.
There's a line that Tripp says about once it's highly unstable, but once we get it on, it sets and we're good or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I remember that. But okay, he says,
my favorite feature of the podcast is live reading scripts with Dan.
I know. There's something that I'm specifically, and I'm looking at the lines, but I don't know which one it. Okay, when he says, I'd be happy to direct you for a small fee. Remember that part where
that's what Jonathan Frakes says.
Because he directs?
I don't think it's a small fee.
Yeah, these days it's not a small fee.
Yeah, no, that was about trying to find the merchant. You're talking about how it's in liquid form, right?
Yeah, so later, once they're on the ship, Tripp's telling Archer.
I've reviewed, you appear to have the necessary equipment to produce liquid Trillium D. Oh, I swear.
No, it's later. Because that's when they're negotiating for it.
Yeah, and
it.
When they negotiate, he says Trillium can only be synthesized in its liquid state.
Right.
And so after that, then they need to convert it to, don't they need to like...
No, they just paint it on.
Yeah, in the later scene, when it's T'Pol, Tripp, and Archer, and they're talking about, well, let's do it in this lab over here because there's extra shielding or whatever. It's out of the way.
So it was always a liquid recipe.
Well, they weren't expecting a liquid.
Right.
But then when they explain it away later, the magic powers of it, they go, I just paint it and it dries and we're good.
Okay. All right. Okay, so
I will argue with Chakotay about this.
Dan's not convinced.
I'm convinced. Okay. I believe Tarek, and I'm not even saying like, okay, if you say so. No, I'm just saying I was confused because I was under the impression that they got the recipe to make it liquid, and then they had to manually convert it. But you're just saying
initial scene does give that idea.
But then we find
later
it's
explained.
Okay. All right, that takes two off the list. Now we're down to five.
Great.
But I'm going to keep with the original numbering system. So number eight, who the heck is this Rajin person? And I'm reading from the page, if you can tell by my delivery that's not very natural.
You mean your page of notes?
Yeah, my page of notes. Who is this Rajin person, and how does she know mind sex powers and super action fighting skills?
It's necessary for the plot.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But that's not an answer.
Multiple outfit changes are needed for the plot, which makes no sense.
All right. I liked that she had those tattoos that threw me off at first.
The tattoos were pretty rad. Cool.
I couldn't sort of like we don't know anything about her really. Like here's leading into number nine. Some of these are all related to Rajin now. Number nine, why did her powers make people's skin invisible? Right, we don't find out why it makes people's skin invisible.
Because she was scanning them. Dan.
She was scanning them, but it makes her skin. But why does it make your skin invisible?
Because she was scanning them.
Right, exactly.
I took it as some sort of like holographic hologram.
Holograms.
Holograms.
Thank
you. Holograms.
Totally. So okay, again, what the audience at home doesn't see.
You don't get it.
Tarek started talking, and then Dan was like, "I'm taking a break. I'm totally disengaging now."
I was looking at my list.
He's like, I'm taking the opportunity.
He wanted to
Where
break,
would
and
I
wasn't
stay?
Let him do it.
All right.
Hologram.
Yeah, take a holographic scan of their organs, because or their organs and systems, because that's what she shows at the end to the Zindi. She puts her hands on the console and somehow transmits it.
Yeah, I just think they could have done it without the skin becoming invisible. But
I think that's just a visual indicator.
Yeah,
for
how would
watchers.
They convey that? And yeah, I thought that. Sensual. By the way, you're talking earlier, Dan, about the sort of variable quality of the effects. I thought that was a good effect.
Yeah, that one was decent.
It was interesting.
But I agree with your all's answers. But for the record,
you got
Patrick
to see bones.
Gave an answer for why she had fight power was because of the plot. And Tark, you said because it looked
back
cool
bones.
Is why the skin turned invisible.
No, not to look cool, but just to show the audience
muscular structure.
Right, to indicate that she wasn't just doing some reiki
she
bullshit.
Wasn't just going ooh and waving her hands back
and brushing her hands gently
but
across
as far as
T'Pol's bosom.
Yes,
but as far as canon goes, why does it do that? You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not talking about why they did it in terms of the plot, why the writers
true, there's no canonical explanation of what her powers even are, how she does
maybe
it.
Maybe I should change this list about canonical explanations that don't pan out or something.
I thought that they were hinting earlier when Phlox says that line about her eyes.
You have the most intriguing eyes.
That one.
I thought that it was like, okay, it's clear she's a spy. Are they hinting that she has like a recording thing in her eyes or something like that? That's kind of where my mind went when I saw that.
Right, yeah, I was actually wondering why they threw in that line as well. And that's actually my number 14. What's the deal with her eyes? Phlox commented on them. See, and so
Phlox.
And so that must. I think you're right that they're.
Did
they
she have some sort
somehow.
Of like awesome eyes? I didn't.
They didn't look awesome to us.
I didn't clock it.
He said the retinal structure. Ew. So it sounded like more he was scanning her and he was like, "Oh, you've got a lot of shit going on back there."
That was just a sort of an expositional way to convey that she's like really good at looking at shit.
Yeah. And the thing is that they had a close up of her, like not close up, but it was we could visibly
zoomed in a little bit.
You could see her eyes, and to me they look normal.
I just don't remember. I remember the line about the eyes, and I remember my understanding that she's really good at like scanning. But I didn't see anything that was memorable about her specific eyes, which is unusual because there are so many characters in Star Trek, like Data, for example, that have unusual eyes.
Or Geordi.
Y'all must be mistaken.
That's right.
Geordi, Geordi has cool eyes. He's always, especially later on when he loses the visor, he gets those, is that what
you're ocular implants.
Yeah.
You have the most intriguing eyes.
Not necessarily.
Strangely enough, I don't have any line of him saying not necessarily.
It's because
why not?
The episode that he says that we covered,
it was before,
which I think was
the before times.
Broken Bow. It was before we did the clever audio clips.
It's the before times.
So for newer listeners, if you go back in our audio catalog, if you go sort of prior to episode 170, we didn't do as many clever audio clips. Occasionally, we would toss something in there, but we started doing it in earnest. I should say Dan started doing it in earnest, episode 170, Shadow Play, Deep Space Nine, Shadow Play. It's a great podcast episode. I highly recommend everyone go listen to it. It was a fun podcast episode, and it's a good episode of Deep Space Nine.
So number 10 relates to her as well. So she was sent by Zindis, apparently, that attacked Earth, and it was presented, though, as if we already kind of should have known that the Zindis did something. So that's something that was explained earlier.
Well, because
she was thrown into after working for the Zindis, but like in the episode, it doesn't explain that the Zindis like have any interest in the humans. So that's just canonically outside.
Well,
the
interest in the humans is explained in the first council meeting.
It is. And in fact, they imply that they've got a
her interest. But her role in all that wasn't
that's
really,
not.
That's not. That's what I mean, is like her role is like, we don't really know.
But it's obvious because the reptile people, the reptilians are like, the other people in,
they
the,
got two snake
in, the opening scene, but like, Degra and the other people are, and Tucker Smallwood's character are saying to the reptilians, yeah, you've got this biological weapon idea, but you don't have the data, so fuck off. It's a stupid idea since you don't have the data. And then the reptilian is all like, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Do you think
What if we did?
What if we did? And then later we hear that there are reptilians come to this slave market and talk to this exact butthead slave owner.
Right. They got some serpent women.
And so as soon as you understand, you like, cotton on to the fact that Rajin's got something shady going on, which is like pretty much right away. I think it's easy to jump to the conclusion make the connection that the reptilians have sent her.
But it's all predicated on this idea that there's this ongoing conflict that we don't really know anything about. Yeah. We don't know we're not told why the Zindi attacked Earth and killed 7 million people. We're not told why these humans apparently attacked the mine. We don't know who attacked first. According to this episode,
fixated on this episode thing because
that's the whole fucking list. That's the list.
I get it. You're right. Okay. You're fair point. I get it. I just wanted to... You just seem to be taking this very seriously.
Well, no, I know, because I'm saying that's why you're saying why my answers are wrong, and I've admitted some of them, they have been explained, but defend my stance on this...
It's like, what's in the episode?
What's in the episode? The whole point is like...
It's kind of like what's in the box, except it's what's in the episode.
Right. What's in the box?
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 We've given you plenty of time here, Dan.
What is in the box?
What is in the box? What's in the fucking box?
What's in the box?
We'll never know.
How long does this
take? I'm not joking, Lee.
All right, don't worry, audience. There's a punchline here. Here comes the punchline. I can't.
Oh, what's in the box? What's in the fucking box? Show you the box. What was in the box? What's in the box? What's in the fucking box? Show you the box. What was in the box?
Okay.
What's in the box?
Sorry, I went to the wrong episode.
It was quite all right. Yeah. It was still funny.
So anyway,
at the end of the day, that's what counts.
Point being is we know like there's a weapon being attacked, and we can kind of intuit that like something has to do with her. She has something to do with that, but it's all very vague. If you don't know the surrounding information. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Number 11. We already went over this. How did that crazy Zindi blob weapon work? Like basically, we talked about that. You know, it's like, is it? How come the bullets don't damage them? We can assume that they have like armor that protects them. Like what happens when the blob hits you? We already went over that. So there's that. Number 12, it just says those Zindi killed 7 million people on Earth. That's all number 12 says. But that's the idea of we don't know. We hear it happens, but we don't really know what the deal is. And we hear it in passing, mm-hmm. Which is kind of like, I like that. I like that they sort of, we gather it from passing. They don't like just try to like, you know,
right.
make a big thing out of it. Even though it is a big thing. They should have made a bigger thing about it.
Yeah, don't make a big thing about it.
Number 13.
She's 7 million.
What happens to Rajin? What happens to her? She escapes, but what happens to her?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows in this episode. Yeah. I don't even know if we find out. 14, I mentioned Tarik brought up, which is what's the deal with her eyes and how Phlox commented on them. Number 15. Why did that Trellium merchant at first tell them that they'd have to come back later? What was he doing? Remember, they came in and he was like, you'll have to come back later. And they're like, oh, we're looking for the Trellium.
Oh, no, that was just, he didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the standard thing.
Yeah, know? But I don't know, man. It seemed like he was doing something.
Nah, that's...
You run a shop and some strangers show up and be like, hey. He was
trying to close up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's them standard, like, film noir style crime caper movie.
That's a meta...
Shady guy.
I mean, Patrick, that's a meta explanation. I would be more willing to buy Tarik's explanation of they were closing up shop, but the problem is then, like, why didn't he just say we're closed, you know? Like, I'm saying, like, if you got a customer...
Well, because he wasn't really closed.
If you have a customer coming into your shop... You want them. You don't want to send them away unless you have a reason for it.
To me, that's an indicator that they're trying to convey to us: this is shady guy. Shady. He's not. This is a front operation. He's shady. A merchant, but he deals in. So he's like,
he's a chemist.
Yeah, it's like if you're running the shop, if you have like the ice cream shop that's the front for the mob, and somebody comes in and actually orders ice cream, you're aggravated. You're like,
we
are actually doing important other stuff here.
Listen,
now, I may be overreading that. That's just sort of how I took it.
I don't know. I thought
he had a weird purple mark on his face.
Seems like he was doing something is all I'm saying.
Yeah, he was up to something.
I hear what you're saying.
Well, Patrick. I really like this guy, and I thought it was an example in this episode. This whole bazaar, this merchant, I was digging all of it. I thought it was really kind of, and we've said this in the past about how Enterprise is kind of the apex of the golden era Star Trek production design, where it's all the stuff they learned in TNG and DS9, the whole style they developed, but in HD with higher quality props, they're still styrofoam, they're still silly. Sort of fundamentally silly, but like kind of awesome.
I even like when they went down to the planet and they had that that port island, that structured port island.
Yeah, that was cool.
Like, that was cool. I was wondering, like, who designed that? Yeah. And what software did they use to make that? That looked really cool.
I read that this episode took, like, an extra bit longer to film because they had to build, like, extra stuff.
Yeah.
I believe it.
And more sets.
And I don't know if this counts as a list, but it's of all the aliens we saw. Mm-hmm. We saw water whale aliens. We saw the monkey. These are Zindi I'm listing off at first. There's the aquatics. Insects. The arboreals, which are monkey men. Then there were, like, the reptilians, which had the spiny mohawk things. And then there was the forehead ridge alien, which they don't give a name for. There was that bonkers bug aliens, which
bonkers.
Was fucking crazy.
Insectoids.
There was the weird blue alien with the big blue
Butthead.
But it looked like a bug and a butt somehow. A beetle butt.
A beetle thorax.
He had a beetle butt head.
Beetle butt head.
Beetle butt head. He had a beetle butt head.
And then there was the initial guy that they talked to that you referenced earlier when Archer was asking for directions. That guy had interesting eyes. You remember that character had a really unique.
The one who had the marmots.
Really unique. I'm doing it again.
Oh, the marmots. Yeah, right. I forgot the marmot
marmots
man.
That are both good pets and tasty.
Yeah, right.
I jumped that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lodge 12 is that way. Tier 2.
I couldn't tell if he was pissed off because Archer didn't want to buy anything or because Archer was being kind of like a
asshole. A little both.
Yeah, because I mean, look, if you're a merchant and you see some dudes obviously dressed up as some kind of soldiers, mm-hmm. first of all, chances are they're not going to want to buy a pet. Maybe something to eat, but it's the kind of thing where maybe ask them, don't expect much, and if they say no, just let it go. Right. But you kept pushing them. You know?
I like that slogan. That's like a government slogan. If they say no, just let it go. Right. It's like an anti-date rape slogan.
Soldiers.
If they say no, just let it go.
Somehow is accurate, but also kind of makes light of it in this way. That's kind of weird.
Oh, it's horrifying.
This episode needed more of that with all the assaults that were happening.
Yeah, I know. Really,
this is a horny episode.
He's gonna do
it. No, I'm not playing it. Okay. Don't worry.
Now he's got to.
No. It's more funny to not play it now, and then I'll play it again later.
Randomly, when you're not expecting
but,
it.
Yeah, when it's in an offensive. Ill-timed location,
but yeah, that merchant should have read the room a little bit better. When that dude bumped into Archer, like you would have thought Archer was like some kind of drunk, belligerent guy at a bar being bumped into. He was ready to start swinging. Okay, there was two Utani serpent women.
Isn't Utani a Star Wars thing? A character?
Utini.
Utini
is what the Jawas.
Yeah, it's a Jawa thing.
Utini.
Did we ever see the Nubian? The Nubian concubine?
Yes, they
show her. The Nubian concubine, which I don't like because
it's very sound Nubian.
It sounds like they're saying Nubian.
Right. When it panned to a white actress, okay. A little bit better.
And then, but this classic again, it's 2003 Berman era Star Trek where they're like, we're going to use a term that evokes the idea of a quote unquote Nubian princess, but because that is objectifying a culture and a socially constructed race, we'll show a white lady. We'll give the job to a white lady.
My last note is this is a very Berman episode.
It is a very Berman episode. It's a good episode, I think.
Somehow.
I enjoy it.
But in spite.
But it is a very horny episode.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. You don't say.
What did you do to T'Pol?
They weren't very pleasant.
What did you do to T'Pol?
They weren't very pleasant.
Pocket
what
sand.
What did you do to T'Pol?
Hey, Dan, if you could play the welcome
skit there.
Are you trying to get the... Now, see, now Dan wants me to...
No,
you must be newcomers. Welcome.
This one? Yeah. Doesn't it have the chittering of the marmot in it at the end?
You must be newcomers. Welcome.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I like that chittering.
I heard that, and I was like, that's almost Tribble.
It is. It's Tribble-ish.
Yeah.
Tribble-ish. It's very Tribble-ish. And the thing
was... Is that what Tribbles speak? Is Tribble-ish?
Maybe, but...
It is now.
There's a problem with Tribble-ish.
It also makes it sound like it's something... It's like a diminutive of something, you know? Like you're trivializing something. You're tribble-ishing.
Tribble-izing it?
Tribble-izing.
Wait. I think there was...
You've
was
been
there,
tribble-ized.
Was there chitter in this one?
Lodge 12 is that way.
Yeah, right at the beginning. And the end
of the end, right?
Yeah. That was a good capture there.
Yeah.
I wanted to include all that
there was
marmot
also,
business.
There was also some seagully type sounds, but I don't know that it was seagulls because it could have been that it was either the marmot again or some other animal, but very faintly in the background. And I suppose it would make sense because
they're on barges. Yeah,
they're on barges because they keep talking about barge 14 or barge 11 or whatever.
That was a neat complex of barges.
No.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Conceptually, I found it very interesting.
Then I didn't mention the merchant, the main merchant guy we saw. He was something. He was a guy who had nostrils, but he still sniffed through like some like holes in his bridge of his nose.
Right, because he sprinkled the pepper all up, in
like
the
up
air.
In the up, like up, because he had these ridges, these hole ridges up the top of his nose. He goes, ooh.
Yeah, he was fun. He was a fun character. Guy.
So there was. It seemed like there was a lot of.
What other spices do you think were in there?
Well, they said cayenne.
Yeah, but the ones they didn't.
I'm sure there was salt.
There was like eight salt tubes in there. I think in the shot they showed of it being open.
Salt. Yeah, seemed like there was a lot of production that went into this episode, which was
value.
Neat. Like the first part when they were on that planet, like it almost felt. I knew it still felt like Star Trek, but it had a different vibe to it somehow. Yeah. There was something extra.
I also thought this was a. It was. I thought it was really well directed and. Even though it was a very male-gazy episode, for sure.
Especially the slow-motion camera when Regine was running away.
Well, not just that, but so in the slave market, I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah, some butts.
exceedingly over.
There's like butt shots.
Not just the design of the costumes, but how the camera followed them. But that being said, it was a very nicely directed. And a thing that Mike Vahar kept doing in this episode was framing characters with something in the background, either a character or an object. The key times this happened were when Archer was talking to the slave merchant and Rajin's in the background, blurry, out of focus. But the way it's framed, it's clear that she's important. It's clear that there's something going on there. And the other time we see it is in... It's actually a few other times, but the other prominent example is when we see T'Pol and Trip in T'Pol's room, and they're on either side of the frame and the widescreen, and there's that, I don't know what the significance of it is, but it's some sort of Vulcan sculpture painting, you know, one of those...
Yeah, that thing.
Some sort of object.
You see it
and
a few times.
It's blurry in the background, but again, go back and look at it. The way it's framed conveys some sort of importance. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but...
It gives kind of that spirituality to the event that's going on.
And there's multiple examples of that in this episode where just sort of clever ways to use the framing and the focus to tell the story, give it a little bit more flavor.
Well, speaking of like an arousal episode, I felt like T'Pol was kind of flirty with the whole time.
Yeah.
Like she had four lines when she went,
"You said this was helping you sleep."
That's like her. She's like telling him she wants to keep doing this. She's flirting. Then she goes,
"Then why do you want to stop?"
And she's like pissed off, you know.
"We're both senior officers. If we were pursuing a romantic relationship, it wouldn't be Lieutenant Reed's concern."
I mean, spell it out for you.
Hold off on the fourth one.
Okay.
Hold off on the fourth one.
Oh, is this a teaser for...
Because we got to take a break.
This is a teaser.
And we want people to be able to stay through the full break.
For the few seconds.
Until we get back.
I'm sorry. You have to cut that out. For the several minutes that we possibly, hopefully, will take.
Oh, yeah. Because we're filling with all the fucking commercials, right? All right.
Commercials.
We will be right back.
Leaving so soon?
Now please leave.
Take me with you, please!
And we're back.
I hope you didn't bring us all this way for nothing.
If I say anything else, they'll kill me. Shall we continue?
Okay, yeah, sure. I think that's a good idea.
Of course.
You did. I hope that didn't make you too uncomfortable.
Booty or no booty?
Booty or no...
Oh yeah, are there any? You had your list. Are there any duties or no duties in this?
That's not likely.
Is there booty or no booty?
Duty.
That option has been discussed and rejected.
Oh, so are you conveying to us with these sound clips? You're conveying to us that there is no duty or no duty game this week.
There is,
of course.
So nobody says it's my duty.
I don't think so.
Or anything along those lines.
You never know.
All right.
No, there. Nobody says anything.
Sometimes Dan likes to communicate using sound clips. Which is fine.
This human's full of words.
I have what you want.
There was a lot of I this and I that. Check it out. There was like, there's like...
I agree.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
I can't even begin to speculate.
I don't remember it. I don't remember much about it.
I don't think so.
I seriously doubt it. I suppose not.
There's a lot of the I this, I that things. And you'd think like that happens a lot in dialogue. I didn't notice it as much in other episodes.
I didn't notice
it. I keep
it.
Smashing the table.
I shouldn't have mentioned anything. You've become very sensitive about the table business. Although I suppose that's good.
Yeah. But there's a lot of these. There's a whole several rows of just I can do this.
I'll be fine.
You know?
I can do
I
this.
Hope you didn't bring us all this way.
Oh,
for
I played
nothing.
That one already.
I don't remember much about it.
I haven't been able to assess how much data was lost.
It's all these things that people did in the I form, like I did this or I didn't do this, basically. A lot of those, you know? You know what I'm saying? What's this me talking and everyone being quiet all of a sudden? Oh, is this getting back at me for being like, let me finish my sentence, guys?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, are you getting back at me and doing the op? Is this malicious, what is it called?
Compliance.
Compliance. Yeah, this is malicious compliance. Thank you. Compliance. I knew what I was talking about.
It would serve you well. So.
Have you ever thought, Dan, just, you know, have some confidence in yourself?
It's not confidence in myself. It's my lack of confidence in you two.
I'm just saying, maybe you're talking about some very engaging and interesting stuff, and we're listening.
I was kind of
curious to see where it was going.
Absolutely.
But actually, those clips did highlight something I thought was neat. Was in the scene where Archer's talking to her through the cell, the audio that they tweaked the audio whenever you're on one side of the wall hearing the other person.
Mm. Like, do you think it was like they did it in a way that was good?
Yes, or, yeah, it was really well done.
You're glad they did that. Okay, yeah. Because sometimes, like, if you listen, I notice if I listen to clips and I play some side by side, you can really pick out where it was very obviously they took two parts and, like, put them together.
The one you played of her saying, I'll something, was filtered to be through the detention wall.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I have all these Regine ones.
I don't remember it. I don't remember much about it. At the time, I was just relieved.
If I say anything to me, they'll kill me.
I don't know. I want to repay you for your kindness.
I have what you want.
Would you like me to show you? I have what you want.
Is that I have what you want?
I have what you want. I'm sorry.
That one.
That one. Oh, there it is.
I was. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go. What did she say?
I'm glad we went through that exercise.
Well, now I want to know what she said. I'm sorry. Who were you trying to contact? Oh, I don't have Archer saying that, but yeah. And I'm sorry.
But there were some on the reverse too. When you're on her side of the wall and Archer saying something, it has that same effect.
I appreciate little nice touches like that.
Yeah.
And like and there's no that's and orders this episode, but like nope. I appreciate nice touches like when they like shake that up and don't just fall to that phrase. That's the whole point of the that's an order thing, is like it doesn't take that much effort to like think of different words, you know?
I agree. Yeah. Avoiding
you can say,
cliches.
Snatch and chorter.
Snatch and what?
Chorter.
Snatch and chorter? What's snatch and chorter?
We're at that point in the evening where Jesse is applying some sort of absurdist humor.
Completely absurd.
Completely absurdist humor.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Another fun little detail, Dan, on your topic of little details, the theme, I should say.
Oh, it had the drum beat.
The theme of little details. What?
This was a drum beat.
Oh, because
opening
of season
episode.
Three. Yeah, yes, they had the jazzy drum beat.
This is a long.
Oh, I never listened to the.
I always listen to it.
I skipped through it the first watch through the second. I was like, I got to hear it.
I feel an obligation.
With that drum beat, like changes the whole thing.
It does.
It makes it.
It arguably makes it weird because it's more jazzy and upbeat in the season where there was
season.
Horrible disaster.
I don't usually listen to any of the openings. Sometimes I listen to Voyager because it's tight, and sometimes I listen to TNG because like Natalie thinks it's funny when like the Enterprise is all going like
like when it's shooting things or it's flying through
space.
Oh yeah.
It's like for TNG, it's like extra like pshoo, pshoo.
TOS is funny. TAS, I think I seem to remember, was kind of funny too. It just
TAS
kind of like floats across
too,
the screen.
Because yeah. It was the same shot in every single episode.
Yeah. And it's got that odd arrangement where they, to make it sort of like a 70s slightly disco arrangement of the TOS theme song. So TAS sort of reverses some of the musical.
It's the inverted
expressions. Yeah, it's an inverted TOS. Yeah. It's wild.
I'm sure somehow that got Roddenberry more money.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I think you were in the middle of saying something, Patrick, earlier, and we probably
no. We were waiting. We were waiting for your fourth.
Oh yeah, there was a fourth. I totally thank you. We could have gone the rest of the episode.
Thank
I think
you, Dark.
I think Patrick and I
totally forgot about the fourth. What was it? The fourth thing that T'Pol said about
the
something?
Flirty thing.
Yeah.
These are flirty
T'Pol.
This is T'Pol flirting with Trip Tucker III.
Oh, and by the way, I do remember what I was about to mention. It was on the theme of little nice things. But you got to say the T'Pol thing.
I don't know what little nice things is.
It's whatever you were talking about before. Don't worry about it. Talk to the audience, it'll make
the
sense.
The sound effects and doing the job so
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
you
like the little
touches. Oh,
the
little
touches.
Okay,
little
I thought
touches.
It was a TV show, like some kind of British TV show I didn't know about. It's called Little Nice Things. This is some kind
of.
You didn't see the five series?
Yeah, Little Nice Things.
TV series of
Chris Brad.
Little Nice Things.
Yeah, you. I thought you were saying like it reminded
me. Was it about a shop, a little trinket shop?
I thought you said.
Yes, exactly.
Last time on Little Nice Things.
I thought you were like the music reminded. It reminded me of the theme song to Little Nice Things, is what I thought you were getting at, which is Kung on Earth. Kung on Earth.
Repair shop.
All right, so this is T'Pol flirting with Trip Tucker III when they were doing the massage, and Trip Tucker is expressing hesitation about continuing with their massages.
Some kind of weird...
Massage it with my magic fingers.
Neuro pressure,
right. So far she said, in chronological order...
You said this was helping you sleep. Then why do you want to stop?
We're both senior officers. If we were pursuing a romantic relationship, it wouldn't be Lieutenant Reed's concern.
And here's...
Would it?
Oh, sorry, T'Pol. Then here's the last thing she says that's flirty.
Come to my quarters in half an hour. We'll resume your neuropressure regimen.
It escalates. Right. That's after the thing, yeah. The shit. That yeah. one actually happens later after the shit explodes.
She's like,
but like, it escalates over
she's
time.
She's into it before yeah. he's into.
Yeah, she's initiating this
yeah,
relationship.
For real.
They're probably gossiping because she like
Vulcans are trouble.
She planted. She planted the gossip. I think she planted it, but she was Vulcan, so she was all smooth about it.
Wait,
for real?
How do you think she just goes up behind people and, like, when they're watching movies and was like whispers and was like,
no, she just walks up and mind melds. Yeah. I yeah. want yeah. Tucker.
Yeah. Or she just sticks it into my people's thoughts. That's kind
massage of massage it with my magic fingers.
Yeah,
magic fingers.
Magic fingers.
What is that? What are magic fingers?
Yeah, the whole Vulcan acupressure or neuropressure thing.
He asked me why I didn't just massage it with my magic fingers.
You know, the reason it works
why
to some
have
degree,
magic fingers?
It works to some degree because they do have pretty good chemistry. So it's not like totally out of the left field or whatever. It is gratuitous though. Both of them.
That isn't necessary.
Both of them are like not dressed very professionally for even for this presumably right. medical activity. But, you know, what are you going to do?
They're all in her. Because that like tension was there.
Pajamas.
Yeah, with bare midriff, because that makes logical sense.
Yeah.
But that tension is kind of there since the pilot.
Yeah.
The decon scene.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It's just sort of like the will they, won't they, kind of dragged on for a while.
I'm sorry, Dan. No one caught that.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. It's better that way. You'll catch it in the next listen.
What'd you say, Dan?
I can't even remember what I said. Tark said a pilot, and I said, "What's a pilot?" Okay. I just sort of said it.
You had to get our Pulp Fiction reference.
Tark listens and hears things.
Yeah.
When I say things, even if the conversation still goes, he still processes it. Yeah. It's not a criticism on you guys or anyone. I'm just saying. I'm just making an observation.
I believe he said I'm a better listener than all of you combined. Yeah. That's what I got out of that statement.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind as we move forward. Mm-hmm. What was the next thing? Was there no? That was it. That was the fourth flirty.
I mean,
thing.
She asked him to come back to his room. Where else do you go from there?
Yeah. All right. So the thing I was going to mention earlier about one of the little things, the fun little things, nice little things,
nice
whatever,
little things.
Whatever the name
little
of that
nice
corner shop,
little
is.
Nice things,
little nice things. Was that
you know that isn't true.
Archer is of course dealing with this at the beginning of the episode with this itchy scale business, which is we understand is from whatever the previous week's adventure was. And Dr. Phlox makes a point of saying, you turn into a fucking other creature, dude.
Yeah.
You can't expect to heal overnight, which I thought was a really cute sort of oblique reference to the Star Trek reset button, right? Especially TOS, Voyager.
Yeah.
Where it was like, okay, at the end of the week, whatever happened is done. And next episode doesn't even mention it. They were setting themselves apart. They were making a statement here that things didn't reset. We're in a new era. We're in season fucking three, people. This is a whole post-September 11th world here. Things are crazy. Archer's going to go ham on some dude's face, just punching the fuck out of his face at some point. Not in this episode, Dan, I know.
I'm trying to remember if there was some Star Trek episode where one of the doctors said something, was pissed off about... Maybe it was a Lower Decks episode where they were like commenting on the makeup thing, or like when they turned people into aliens and they were like, I got something about they were pissed because they got into it to be a doctor, not like a makeup artist or something. I think that was a Lower Decks.
That does sound Lower Decks.
I bet that's Lower Decks.
But
Tana said something about that probably.
Yeah, something. Yeah, I bet it was Tana.
Usually with a lot of swearing in the middle of it.
Yeah, I think it was. Actually, I think that totally was it. Anyways, Rajin was sent by the Zindi. We established this. Mm-hmm. But like, what's her relationship with the other Bug Butt Man? By the way, he's named Zajad or something.
I think a plausible scenario.
Like, they couldn't be in on it, but at the same time, they could have been.
I think he definitely was.
I think here's the scenario. Tell me what you all think about this, because what makes sense to me is... The Zindi reptilians came. They're like, they know he has a body scanning slave lady. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe that's the case. It sounded like she's probably an actual, you know, enslaved person. Has this skill. She comes from the type of people that have this skill. So they sought this person out, bought her, and said, okay, here's what we want you to do as our slave person, is we want you to infiltrate these people. And
they weren't very pleasant.
And scan them. Now, here's the thing. That plan relies on the Zindi reptilians knowing or understanding that the Enterprise would have to come to this place in right. search of Trillium D, and in doing so would have to walk by the slave thing so that Archer would get to...
No, because they were sent to the slave thing by the chemist.
Oh, you know, you're right.
So all the Zindi reptilians would have to do is tell the chemist.
Oh, yeah, right. you're right. Forgot about that.
But then, though,
there's... he was like, hey, the Zindi were...
But still a little complicated, but not implausible.
But they're... Okay, but there's the more complication because they have to assume that Archer... Like, she ran away. They'd have to assume that Archer would take them. That's probably a safe assumption. But then, like, the Bug Butt Man, like, comes up and actually acts like, no, I want her back. And if he didn't really want her back, like he could have done a job that he could have taken it easy on himself and not tried to fight Archer. Like, I know he wanted to put on a convincing show.
It was a pretty anemic fight.
Yeah,
it works because it's anemic in a Star Trek way, but it was especially certain moves where they're like very, sort of like very slowly rolling over each other to be like, oh, don't hurt yourself.
But I think Archer got a few good licks in.
Oh, for sure.
And like as
Star Trek style.
And even if I was Bug Butt Man, I'd still be worried about getting my ass beat by a soldier, right? And what if Archer totally sucked at fighting and he accidentally beat Archer up? Then the whole plan's screwed.
That would never happen.
Well, I'm saying, what if it wasn't Archer? What if they sent
Then they can just take Archer. Then they got his body.
What if they sent their backup line and Archer wasn't available?
It is a bit of a convoluted
plan. It was Mayweather. They found a use for him finally.
Harry Kim.
There was no Mayweather in this episode.
There was two lines.
There was. The very brief late episode. I have it in
same
my
with
note.
Hoshi.
I say brief. Oh, really? My note. Well,
I remember
right
Hoshi.
Brief late episode Mayweather appearance. And he basically says nothing.
I had a note that said, did they forget they have Mayweather again? And then right as I wrote that down, he showed up. Like, okay, there he is.
Every time.
He was most underused.
Yes, yeah. I know, but you barely see him.
A little bit.
Registers because he does not have an encounter with Regine.
I don't think it was a full set shot. It was just him, one shot on him. So it's like, hey, we need you for like 10 minutes to do these two lines. And
he's like
done
on the bridge.
But
you don't even see the whole bridge.
There's no people behind him or anything.
Okay, here are his lines. We're dropping out of warp. Go ahead. Aye, sir. Captain. And those ships just entered some kind of vortex. They're gone. Those are his five lines. Yeah. One of them was just captain. I guess it was kind of like captain or captain. I don't know if it was like captain or if it was like captain.
Captain.
Yeah. But those were his five lines.
I know. It's
that's an easy paycheck that week.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I'm saying? But
you're saying.
I think Zajad, if you watch the fight, Zajad got a few, Bug Butt Man got a few good hits in.
It was a good fight. It was not a bad fight. I'm just saying that it was not a very modern fight. It was a very Star Trek style choreographed
and a very
fight.
Sudden ending of Archer having to choke a bitch.
Yeah. Where you just like,
I found this necktie.
Yeah, right.
I remember thinking about how it was like, it was a little silly, but it's also, this is the kind of fun action where it doesn't go on for too long. It's related to the plot and the characters. It works fine.
It's like an old James Bond fight.
Yeah, exactly. It had that kind of old school vibe. And I always liked it when Enterprise pulled that off because it often did pull off kind of like a nostalgic vibe, reaching back to kind of TOS 60s style.
Yeah, when you start to get up to Discovery and on, actually, most specifically, I first remember with the first season of Picard, they straight up have like pro wrestling fights.
Yeah.
That they turn to like suplexes and body slams.
It's wild.
No, they first did that in Voyager when they had The Rock on.
Right. Okay, yeah.
Well, that was in that wrestling episode,
yeah.
UPN.
Yeah.
Cross promotion.
Yeah, so we never find out the name of that planet. And we don't know if it's a water world, but they made it seem like it was some kind of water world. Because like in Star Trek, if a world has a trait, if someone has a trait on that world, it's the trait of the entire world, right? So it's probably a water world. Why else would they build that island out there, like out in the middle of the water?
What world do you think these serpent women come
from?
What
world?
Because they talked about the reptilians came.
They named some kind of Utar.
Would you like to go to a theme park called Serpent World?
Well, I mean... Can you give me some more details about what goes on in this theme park?
All you know is it's called Serpent World.
Legoland?
Does it have a roller coaster called the Anaconda?
All you know is it's as big as like, you know, King's Dominion.
King Cobra. Because
everyone knows what King's Dominion is.
King's Dominion.
Six Flags.
From context clues, people can... So you say Six Flags as if that means anything fucking UK.
Well, it means more to... It has Six a farther Flags. Reach than King's Dominion.
It reaches to Texas with a Six Flags reference.
Well, I'm saying though, I'm not talking about a wild thing. World. I'm talking about a King's Dominion.
Better. That's even more hyper-local.
Wild world.
So
Hershey Park gets involved.
Exactly. Does it have... Is it a roller coaster theme park? Is it a theme theme park that has just no roller coasters, or but it has like merry-go-rounds.
You just know it's called Serpent World. That's all you know. Serpent. That's all you know.
It's just it just has serpents.
I remember once driving down to Florida, and I forget where we were, somewhere, maybe Georgia or something. There was a sign that said like Sunday night, 8 o'clock. It's one of them snake handler churches.
Oh, right. Oh no.
That's the only place. West Virginia is the only place where that shit's legal, I've heard.
Well, we were driving, and I wanted to
as
go.
As a religious practice.
I wanted to go because
but
it
they
was.
They have them in like Georgia.
As a coincidence, when we were driving there, it was like Sunday at 8 o'clock. Whatever the date, whatever the time was, I was like, oh my God, it's starting like right now.
We could make it.
We could go do this. And everyone was like, Patrick, no! You're not going to fucking turn down that road. the road with the billboard that says snake handling.
In hindsight, something good call.
Well, and it had a clever,
is there something wrong?
It had a clever illustration of some hands reaching into a tank full of writhing snakes.
Because, you know,
awesome.
Somebody was going to get bit, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you go.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
That's why you go. I want to go see the snake handler.
Some fool's going to get bit by a snake. Yeah. And he's going to have to get rushed to some hospital.
Like, I don't know if going to the hospital is an option in this context. Cause you're being judged by God.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They don't believe in that.
Yeah. Anyway, serpent women. I don't know where they come from, but
I don't know.
We didn't get to see any. So.
Mildly intriguing.
Man, very, very. I did think that the slave owner guy was he was missing out on a big business opportunity because he was all talking about, he's like, he only sells slave women. Why not slave men or other varieties?
Yeah.
You can make a lot more money if your menu options are bigger.
That shop is around the corner on Barch 12.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe it's like that because they do have those, like, there are some markets where it's one person only sells washing machines, and if you want a fucking dryer, like, you got to go down the way. So it could be like that, but I don't know.
I got one of them all-in-one units.
Well, washer, yeah, dryer. That's a yet a different barge.
It's the third
barge,
store.
Barge six.
When back at the Trillium situation, Tucker,
is that a variation on the phrase "anyway back at the ranch"?
Of course.
Have you coined a new phrase? Anyway, back at the old Trillium.
This will obviously delay us.
Trillium situation. That's a good one. That's a keeper. That's one you should
a
save.
A new favorite.
In,
yep.
Saving your bank
Trillium
of go-tos.
D's.
Trillium D's nut.
That's back when his name was Barat, I think. Actually.
Barat.
Barat. Because he's a brat.
Yeah, exactly. But there's an apostrophe
and
between the
rat.
B and the rat. So he's
likes
B-
to roast up some brats.
There's an apostrophe between the B and the R, so it's B-rat. He's a rat.
He's totally a rat.
Yeah. Or he's a brat. Or he's just Barat. He goes, he says, be sure to follow the protocols precisely. And Tucker's like, or what? And he goes, what?
Or make me.
Is it? Yeah. He's, but then he goes, let's just say that in its liquid form, Trillium D is extremely unstable. That's not how you use the phrase, let's just say. Like, you're not supposed, you're supposed to say that when you're being coy about something you're trying to say, right?
So
you're not
say like, I know you are, but what am
you're
I?
Not, you're not.
Let's just say you don't want to do that.
Yeah, like, exactly. So he's like, you're not supposed to say it when you're directly telling them, you know, what it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to say like, let's just say you'll all blow up and die. Like, that's not how you use it. Yeah, you'd say something like, let's
not,
just
not unless you're being like ironic.
You'd say like, let's just say you won't be needing like toilet paper anymore or something like
no,
that.
No, I get what you're saying.
You know, it'd be more something like that. That's when you use that phrase. So I take issue with that.
As well you should.
Archer was creepy this episode. Now you can always like write it off to her superpowers. Because at one point he goes, she's asking if she can go anywhere on the ship. And he's like, there's some restricted areas. Otherwise, look around. And she says, your crew won't mind. He's like, I seriously doubt it. You know, that's kind of kind of creepy. And you could attribute that to her superpowers, right? But no one's skin became invisible. So, like, we can't, from the visual
I think he
cues,
was just horny.
Yeah, he was just being horny. He was just, uh-oh. No, why'd you do that, Tarek?
Fucking do that. The only thing I can tell you is that you're in danger.
He did that later, too. When she's like, I was taken away when I was very young. I don't remember much about it, and I doubt anyone there would remember me. And he's like, you never know. You seem very memorable to me. Not only is that horny, but it's kind of inappropriate because, like, she was young. She said she was young.
Presumably a young child.
Yes, right. And so it's like,
extra.
How memorable is a young child? I'm sure they're memorable, but they're not the same person when they're like an adult.
There's a lot of subtext in this episode that is and him to use it really that, and
him to,
and
yeah, and him to use it in that way of like, you seem memorable to me.
And the reason
I wouldn't forget you. Whoa.
The reason it's creepy is not just for the explicit statements. It's because they are stated and obviously written with not even the slightest hint that there might be something weird about it.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a product of the time and all that other jazz, but it's still interesting to observe that something that really would have gone by really not observed as being even remotely possibly an issue. You look back on it, you're like, that's a little weird. Yeah. A leering guy. And then
it's just a crazy idea.
How many storylines involved men being manipulated by sexy ladies? It's like you see that in TAS. That's really you'd think it's
and, but she was trying to manipulate
and the Lorelei signal had that same plot.
That's about it.
But she was trying to manipulate T'Pol and she couldn't do it.
And Hoshi. She was equal opportunity.
Yeah. She did do it with Hoshi.
Oh, I know several languages.
Yeah, right. I know. That's like that's how she flirts with people. She goes,
I'd love to hear your language.
But yeah, that whole scene with T'Pol, like she kept trying to make her hornier and hornier, and it wasn't working. So it finally caused her to
almost
get like. So like, did she just like? Was it T'Pol's resistance that caused the shit to happen, or was she amping her shit up so much that it overloaded T'Pol's like sensors, and that's why she got knocked? Did she get so horny she got knocked out? Is what I'm asking.
No, I think it was the latter point where she just her defenses were overwhelmed because she kept trying harder. Because she says later she shouldn't have resisted.
Yeah,
it seems like she had to try harder to get through the defenses.
And Tripp was knocking at the door, so she was in a hurry to get out.
Yeah, but
of
he's easy to take out. You just hit him with one vase and get away wherever you need to.
But the whole like I told you shouldn't have resisted. That's the whole situation. It's like well, I punched you in the face. It's your fault for not doing what I told you to do. You know, like that whole thing. It's like it's not my fault. You decided to be fucking asshole. But it was really uncomfortable when she did her hands around the front of T'Pol's stomach.
Boobs. Yeah, there was
her stomach.
Oh,
like the stomach
when she was
part,
rubbing the stomach.
It was really God, that started. That was like a little.
Well,
weird.
It was. We witnessed a sexual assault. Is what it was.
I mean,
effectively.
I mean, I guess the
it was a personal assault with a sort of a sexual manipulation.
Totally.
Certainly. If hints of that.
I guess you have to measure it all against Beverly Crusher's experience and what's that episode called?
With the candle?
With the
the sex candle?
Yeah, what was I can't remember the name of that episode.
Yeah.
Called Sex
Season
candle.
7
Sex
episode,
Candle.
Blah, blah, sex candle.
Sub Rosa.
Yeah, Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa, right. Yeah. Sex candle. Sex scandal? Sex scandal? Sex candle.
That's a deeper episode than we often give
deeper.
It credit for.
Yeah.
As we know from Jesse from Crusher Convo, you should go listen to her podcast, the Crusher Convo podcast. They've talked
she
about
knows.
That episode a few times. Very interesting.
Do you think that scene is more or less intimate than the T'Pol, the Rajin scene?
What do you think, Tarek?
Intimate? I was going to say it's
more
less
suggestive, intimate. I don't know what word you want to use
it's,
for it.
It's less. There is some coercion in Sub Rosa. This is just straight out assault.
True. That's true.
I have the word ick in big letters and check marks next to it every time something made me think that. And there's a lot of check marks in that after this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, because so much of it is just a little skeevy.
Yeah.
And that scene in particular is, I don't know. I think this scene is worse somehow because... yes, again, there was definitely manipulation in Sub Rosa.
But there's a hint of consent there, too.
Yeah, and also, it's silly, in rightly or wrongly, you know, there's other things.
What's silly about this, fucking your grandma's candle? Nothing silly about that.
This just felt very real. This felt like somebody was, like, broke into your room and is assaulting you. For the purpose of getting information to destroy your entire people. You
and
know,
yelling at you to stop resisting, yeah.
Yeah, it's intense.
One of the problems with this episode, though, is this whole like creepy ick part of the episode is like overshadowing the general heroics of Malcolm Reed. Like, do you see some of those tactical work scenes? Did you see that one scene where it was all like do 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 do?
Did you hear the piano? There's some like aggressive piano in that scene. We're like do 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 do. You hear that piano?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's a play on the TOS fight music.
It's a variation on that.
But he was doing some signals, like he was like very like, you know, confidently, resolutely telling. He's like, he pointed at that guard. He's like, after they go into that room and the music stops and he points a phaser and the music plays and it stops and he points it up at that thing and then he goes back and he points at that one guy like, you go that way. And then he's like, you. He beckons that other guy to come with him and they do it all silent. There was a lot of silent action in this episode.
And you're digging this.
Reed was awesome.
Digging Reed. This. I thought the flying the laser. I made me think of the flip thing. That was sort of stupid.
That was stupid.
Weird choice directing wise.
What year was this episode made?
2003.
Yeah,
that's when it came out. Anyway,
so so The Matrix came out before this. So this was probably like, you know, I'm sure a lot of movies do that. It wasn't just The Matrix, but like Matrix was really popular.
Matrix was 99,
still pretty popular. Yeah. After The Matrix, a lot of things happened. I bet there was some influence of The Matrix in the decision for the slow mo and the spinningness.
The dark time.
Yeah, there was a slow mo when the cell wall exploded when they blew up just a small part of it.
Yeah.
To get her out. Yeah, it was slow-mo when she jumped and spun in the air, too, that, right?
Oh, yeah, the John Woo shooting scene.
Yeah, I guess John Woo was more accurate.
That's it. It's the John Woo business.
All right.
Woo. I just needed some doves to be flying across engineering for some reason.
All right, well, we're getting close to the end here. I think we've discussed most of the major bits.
You agreed to give me more time.
Episode. I enjoy this. We were just talking about there's plenty of skeeviness. It's definitely like a super horny episode.
But
you embrace that, if you're like, okay, I'm just going to deal with it, shoving it in my fucking face. The actors are having fun. There's some cool aliens, cool production design.
Hologram.
The story is pretty engaging. It's an interesting idea. I mean, there's nothing super, I don't think there's a bunch of crazy cleverness here. It's a bunch of MacGuffins and sci-fi what's-its and who's-its and all that. But
what's-its?
It was fun. It had an abrupt ending, though.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to the Zindi console, and they're all like, okay, we're, you know, we're going to do
our thing. Here's the scans of the humans.
Yeah, and she was like, she was like, you can't learn everything you need to know from humans by biometric scans or whatever. And I'm like, well, to make a super weapon, yeah, that's all you really need, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't care. The bioweapon. That's what you all use, the bioweapon.
It's like, you don't learn about, like, you know, their resilience and their stick-to-itiveness. Yeah. But, like, if you got a fucking
grit, their gumption.
But if you got a bioweapon that's going to kill them all, then yes.
Their vim and their verve.
That's all you need to know is what comes from the scans. But, you know, maybe I guess it's just saying they're going to fight back.
Yeah.
They're gonna do it.
Yeah.
They're going to get ya.
It's always a little awkward to do, like, these, you know, in the middle of a larger season arc.
In the context of the entire season arc,
it may flow better and make more sense because, like Dan's wonderful list,
there's things you
just don't get in the episode, but it's fine standalone. Not great. It's not horrible, other than the horrible themes of the rape and assault.
Yeah.
Jesse got that Billy Joel reference I did. You said in the middle of the long arc, blah blah blah, and then I sang that.
I must be searching for something.
I sang that
something so undefined.
I think I sang the words of
that. It can only be seen.
I sang the
in the eyes of my mind.
I sang the tune of
in
that
in the middle of the night.
No.
I had that album.
That guy's out of control.
I sang the tune to you, the words you used, and Jesse got it.
I got it. Congratulations, Jesse. Congratulations. All right.
How long?
Okay, that was...
Best thing for you to do?
What was that episode called? Oh, yeah, Regine.
Snurbity Durs.
Regine. All right, that concludes that. Next week, Dan's algorithm has instructed us to go down old TOS way and watch and discuss Tomorrow Is Yesterday.
Perfect.
Indeed. Tomorrow Is Yesterday, a classic TOS episode, if there ever were one. I don't
remember much about it.
It's been a little, me neither. It's been a little while since I've seen it. I remember the basics. But anyway, Tomorrow Is Yesterday. That's coming next week. So watch that in...
Are you saying you're not up to the task?
In preparation for that. In the meantime, you can reach out. Meantime. Contact us at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
In the meantime.
You can go to
in the meantime.
Triggered one of Dan's... what do you call those? There's like little hidden trap doors in computer programs where if you enter the wrong data...
Did what?
Anyway,
Trojan y'all horse, must like, be mistaken.
Little Trojan horse routines. So, the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com. We've got patreon.com/itsgotstartrek for evidence! Some fun paid content.
I'm not joking, Lee.
YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Jesus all that Brian. Business. We're all over the place. Tell your friends.
Milana's on it.
Yeah. And if you write a review, Dan will write you a haiku.
So, of course.
Write us a review, send us a link to that review, and then Dan will write you a custom haiku. He promises not to use AI.
Sabotage. You never know.
Don't worry. Don't worry. The results will demonstrate that AI.
How can you walk away from such beauty?
AI was not employed. It'll be so creative. All right. That'll do it for us this week. We'll talk to you next week. Tomorrow is yesterday. Bye bye.
Thanks for your time.
Good night.
Good night. On our planet, wars were fought over these. Careful.
What's this one called?
Black pepper.
Ooh.